Roy was bitten on the neck by a 7-year-old male white tiger named Montagore.
Why is it gotta be white? Okay.
Oh, they only had white tigers.
Really?
They're German. So,
the tigers?
It was Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, Siegfried and Roy. No. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
Today, welcome to the world of magic.
Yes, right here in the Hey You Know It studio, we're doing all magic all the time.
Ready or not, yeah, it's coming at you.
Oh, it's magic and all that. This was Katie's idea, and I don't know if she knew that I was a huge magic nerd.
I didn't know. I find out these things. Jaquetta is a multifaceted person, yes. And so I find out all these things about her.
So whenever I go to Las Vegas, I always go to see magic shows.
Yeah.
And I've seen David Copperfield, who we're going to talk about. I've seen Chris Angel. I did not see Siegfried and Roy because I think they'd been chomped at that point.
Yeah.
I've seen there's a guy named Dirk, Lance Burton, Matt King. I've seen everyone who's in Las Vegas.
I don't know any of those people.
The Amazing Jonathan. I've seen everyone except for Penn and Teller because, as we were talking about, they freak me out because I don't like a mime. Sorry.
Right, and because he's silent. Because Penn and Teller, the one guy talks too much, the other guy not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen them, listeners.
Yeah, they're
huge.
You should look
at, they're all over.
We're all over the place. So, I want to kick off today with the timeline of magic.
Yes.
And so this timeline starts, and now they're saying BCE. I don't know what the E is for.
Before Christian era.
Oh, really? Okay, what was wrong with BC?
Before Christ? Christ.
Okay. So 27...
They have to be like era to just be like that time. Yes. Kind of, more or less.
So this is 2700 BCE. The first known performance of a conjuring effect was a magician called Dedi in ancient Egypt.
And
it
Dedi?
Was, yeah. He was conjuring balls. That's what it says here. He was apparently, they claim that he was doing the old cup and ball trick, which I think is not just a magic trick. It's also like a swindle, right?
And it's a con, yeah.
Yeah, it's a cup and ball trick. It's a cup and ball trick.
But if a guy asks you to cup balls, it's a different thing.
Yeah, or if he wants to conjure balls.
It's another thing.
It's famous news. So that's 2700 BC. And then apparently nothing happened. For a long time, according to this.
Well, they were busy
line.
Hunting and gathering.
And then Cup and Ball gets back.
Okay.
From 50 to 300 CE.
Oh.
All right, so this is after. So they waited until Christ.
Christ. He first was Jesus, name change, Christ.
Christ. So now it's 50 to 300 CE. The Aceto Bulara, they're a group of people, a group of magicians that went around, and they specialize in cups and balls.
Really?
By specialize, I'm assuming that's all they fucking did. Because I don't see anything else. I couldn't find anything else about
them. They can't
get
enough of them.
Yeah, they used they're called the Aceto Bulara because apparently the cups were like vinegar cups.
Oh.
And the ball, it was a cup and ball.
Okay.
Right? So then from 400 to 1000, which is the dark ages, if you practice magic then, you were strung up.
Yeah, because you were doing the devil's work.
So previously, no one thought that magic was the occult.
Because they were like, it's a trick.
Yeah, it's a trick. Then
it's an illusion.
An illusion. A whore does tricks, right? Yeah. An illusion. So during the Dark Ages, nobody really did think. From 1000 to 1500, guess what? Cup and ball is back.
Oh, no.
On the scene.
I wonder who found it. Was like,
I wonder who had the balls to bring that back.
Yeah.
Right. Like, who was like, I'm going to fucking do it. It's been 1,000 years. So then they cup and ball, and it was just cheating. Like, it was a part of, like, circus performance, street performance. It was just cheating. It was very little magic, mostly Coney Island style, like, swindling. Then in 1584, Reginald Scott published The Discovery of Witchcraft, which was a book that was supposed to counter the idea that magicians were witches. But unfortunately, probably because of the title, people mistook it for that. And they burned the book.
No!
Yes!
Oh, why?
As a protest. So this guy was trying to say, look, magicians and witches are not the same thing.
Yeah.
But because he called it witchcraft, people were like, we got to put this on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's confusing for people.
Imagine the person who hand wrote that book. Like, it took me 6 months.
I have 4 copies. Really going to burn them all? Like, a book burning back then was probably more of a big deal because now we can just print more.
Right.
But back then it was like, really, that was the only copy.
Yeah.
In 1584, Reginald Scott, oh, I said that. Sorry, 1720. There's a lot of holes in magic history. I'm going to have to do my research when I go to the Magic Castle.
Okay.
In 1720.
Well, Magic Castle. Tell everybody what the Magic Castle is.
Oh, it comes up in this.
Okay.
I'll bring it for this.
All right, just wait. Let's
just hold on. It's going to blow your mind. Put your magic helmet on. So in 1720, Isaac Fawkes, an English magician, retires.
All right.
Now, that's supposedly a big deal. What he used to do was he would put a card on the ceiling, and then he would have people guess, make a guess, and whatever their guess was, that was the card.
He would glue it or a piece of gum?
I think he would stick it up there in some way.
Okay.
That's the magic part, right?
All
right. So, and he also did dexterity of hand, and then he had a show that was, like, impressionist and contortionist. So that's, like, the beginning of, like, more modern magic.
All right.
Then in 1750, some guy did the thumb tie effect, and that's supposed to be the big, that's when they started bringing magic inside off the streets.
Oh, okay. The thumb tie.
So the thumb tie is, like, it's before they would do the straitjacket, so they would tie their thumbs together
mm-hmm.
with a very strong rope. And then they would have their thumbs escape from it. I know it sounds silly,
yeah.
But I went online and I looked at it, and it actually looks quite convincing.
Okay.
So this is for, like, close-up magic. So it's a long time between the thumb tie thing and then the straitjacket, which we can all see from, like, a 500-seat theater. So the thumb tie was, like, the early straitjacket thing. He also had this thing called the orange tree illusion, which it was just a pot. And then an orange tree would grow out of it, and then oranges would flower and come out of it.
Oh, that's nice.
So this is called automata, which is just, like, mechanical stuff.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
apparently back then, that was also a part of, like, magic.
Oh, okay.
So, like, wind-up shit.
Okay.
Then, finally, in 1805, Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin died, and that is where Houdini got his name from. This guy is supposed to be the father of modern magic, and he made it magic elegant.
Oh, Houdini?
No, this guy.
Oh, this
Houdin.
Guy.
Oh, Robert Houdin. He made it elegant.
Oh.
So that's when, you know, guys start dressing up. They start coming on, like, Count Dracula.
Oh, with the whole, the tuxedo and the
one theater. Thing leads to another.
It's and, like, look, let's spiff it up a little.
Spiff it up a bit.
Yeah.
So then from there, we have all the things that we have now. We have Harry Houdini. People started making books about magic. In 1902, the Society of American Magicians is formed. In 1905, the Magic Circle is formed. And the guy who started the Magic Circle, apparently David Devon, he was expelled a couple times.
Oh, what's the Magic Circle, though?
The Magic Circle is like an organization for magicians only.
Oh, it's like a union.
Yeah. And okay. The guy who started it, David Devon, was kicked out because they accused him of, like, exposing tricks.
That's like... Listen, this happens a lot. Like, people start a band, and then they get kicked out. Like, you start an improv group, you get kicked out.
My husband told me that the guy that started Dungeons and Dragons, who started the whole thing, apparently they kicked him out.
Yeah.
It's like he invented the whole thing, and they're like, get out. All right, so this goes down to, eventually we get to David Copperfield that's on here at Lance Burton, and then there's a thing called the Magic Castle. So the Magic Castle is in Hollywood, and I go there every year when I'm in L.A., and basically, it was a 1908 Victorian mansion.
It's your pilgrimage.
It's my mecca, my magic mecca. And if you go there, it's amazing. It looks like something out of, like, a Walt Disney World, like, World of Magic kind of thing.
All right.
Everything is, like, magical in some way. Like, there's, like, a keyboard that plays by itself. You look in the mirror, you see something. You look again, you see something else.
Oh,
and they
okay.
have magicians from all over the world perform there. And there's the first time I've ever seen a female magician.
Really?
Which there are, like,
it's like none. Two.
Yeah, there are very, very, very few of them.
Well,
I read one article on it, and they said that girls are really interested in magic, just like science and math. And then at puberty, girls are discouraged from doing things
like
that,
and
then it falls away, which kind
of
sucks. Because I'd like to see more female magicians.
Yeah.
I think it would be not that all magic is corny.
They're like, make your voice disappear.
Yeah,
that's when you hit puberty.
Can
that's
make your big boobs bigger.
Yeah,
larger and higher up. That's what we want. So incredibly...
Oh, you want to do magic? Here's some makeup.
Yes.
Get to know that.
But I'd like to bring you to 1974, very important year.
Yes.
A year some say I was born, but also the year of Doug Henning.
Doug Henning, yes.
And so Katie's going to give us some information.
Love us some Doug Henning. He was born in 1947, and he's Canadian.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Always good. Always a good time.
They call him a magician, illusionist, escape artist, and politician. Politician, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he actually a politician, or did they just call
now,
him
yeah,
that?
Okay, yeah, he was. He became a politician.
That's cool. Sonny Bono style.
Right. And if you've seen Doug Henning, he has long, he's like a hippie style. He's got long hair, he's got this big mustache.
And he's got curious teeth, I remember that.
Curious teeth.
Like a beaver in the front.
Yeah.
I just remember he had kind of a Hebrew was a mullet, a Hebrew mullet, and then the two teeth in the front.
Yeah. Let's see. He kind of grew up in Ontario, kind of.
Somewhat. That's what he said.
He performed his first show at the age of 14 at a birthday party for a friend.
That's like all of these guys that we're going to be talking about today. They all started really young. They're very entrepreneurial.
Yeah, it's like when they hit puberty, they do magic. And then girls are like, no.
No.
We can't do it.
But they say, they think it's going to get them late.
Yes, but it's not going to.
You're going to show them a cup and ball, and they're going to go cup someone else's balls after the show. They don't care.
Yeah, so he was inspired because of the audience's spellbound reaction. So Canada.
So Oohs and Ahs?
Yeah, thing? Canada. It's like 1960 or something. And they're like, he's like 14. He's like, hey.
Check out what I got.
Yeah. So, later on, he went to college, he studied psychology.
That's unusual. Most of the magicians, they seem to drop out, or not go at all, because they had a good thing going. You start working at 14.
Right. Well, after he graduated, he was awarded a Canada Council for the Arts grant.
Okay.
And the terms required him to study magic. You must study magic as part of the grant.
Only in Canada.
So he's like, fine. And so he did some traveling.
Fine. Fuck it, I'll do it, if that's what's required of me.
And he studied the magic greats of the time, the Sly Deeney and Dave Vernon.
Sly Deeney,
isn't that funny? And he considers Sly Deeney his primary teacher of magic. That was the one that he...
So what, he studied magic at university?
With this grant, and he got a grant, he was traveled around, and he studied under these different magicians.
That's crazy.
I know, right? So he also was one of the only magicians to have a long-running Broadway show called The Magic Show.
Yes, The Magic Show.
Yes. And the song, it was a musical, and he did magic in it. It was composed, the songs were composed by Stephen Schwartz.
Really? You know, David Copperfield was in The Magic Man.
Oh.
In Chicago.
Ha.
Yeah, interesting.
And he was nominated for a Tony for his performance in it. And basically, the story...
That's crazy. I had no idea he'd done it. I just know him from watching him on TV.
Oh, no.
Wait, there's no... Where are the magic Broadway shows now? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
We need to bring that back.
No. But he had the show, and he did... it was... after his Broadway musical, he approached NBC with
pretty... He approached them.
He was like, hello.
Why wait?
He wanted to reproduce Harry Houdini's famous water torture escape.
Really?
And so they were like...
That's really dangerous.
Yeah, he performed it for them and they signed him immediately.
In the room? See, this is one thing I don't like about show business. This guy's already well respected. Yeah. He's already like a major thing. He's got to go in and fucking sweat for these people in their office?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, hold on, I'll be right back.
No, you got to see this.
Roll this in. Yeah. Get it in there. Fill it up.
Yeah. So his special was called Doug Henning's World of Magic. It was hosted by Bill Cosby.
I remember these.
1975. And his tagline...
I'm sorry, I remember when they put it back on the air, because I'm not that old.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, but he had several specials, and then he would end each special by saying, anything the mind can conceive is possible. Nothing is impossible.
Yes.
All you have to do is look within, and you can realize your fondest dreams. I would like to wish each one of you all of life's wonders and a joyful age of enlightenment.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I believed that shit, too, when I was a kid.
Yeah, because, you know, he also studied TM.
Really?
Yeah.
Transcendental Meditation.
Right.
So, do you remember his shows? I remember the mullet, and I remember him wearing spandex.
He wore spandex, and he wore, like, in jewel tones.
Yeah.
And one of his famous tricks was...
Nowadays, you could not get away with that.
No, not at all. Not at all. He did the origami box, and that's when he had a little tiny box that he unfolded, and it became bigger. Mm-hmm. Then he put a woman inside it. Then
one does. That's why there aren't a lot of women in comedy.
Yeah.
They keep getting
that's
lost.
That's where they are in comedy. Yeah. They're in the box.
Getting sawed in half.
Yeah, and then he made the box small again and then put swords through it.
Yeah.
And then opened it up, and she came out, and it was like...
How come no one's ever put a dude in a box and put swords
in? Yeah, so think about what that means.
But think about what kind of people are doing it, too.
Yeah, but like, here's what would everyone like to say? I'm going to stick a woman
in a box and then stick swords to her and then have it open up. You know what I want to say? Here's a real metric. Put fucking Vin Diesel in a box. Put swords in that.
Yeah, and see what happens. See how he reacts.
Just try to put The Rock in a box. That's a trick right there on its own. If you could survive that, you get yourself a magic show.
Sadly, he
we know where he's going.
Yeah, liver cancer.
Oh no.
Yeah, and he died at age 52 in the year 2000.
That's so young. Like, I was going to say, why haven't I heard from him in some time? Yeah, no, but he's been dead. Gone. That would explain it.
Yeah, and James Randini, a fellow, you know.
Is everyone Randini? The great Casmarini?
Yeah.
And the Sopmarini?
The Sopmarini. he claimed that Henning, you know, because he studied TM, he abandoned regular
medical.
He didn't go for help, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too late because
he could transcend to, like, TM his way out of it.
Right. And eating nuts and berries and things like that.
Oh,
and
no.
He was just like,
I do remember him being very fit, but all magicians have to be quite fit.
You have to, because you have to jump around.
Because of the tricks, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of danger involved. That's awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So I totally remember watching this guy when I was a kid and being kind of, like, spellbound, because I never really got to see magic unless it was on TV when I was growing
and
up.
And he was very gentle.
Who is
the painter that
Bob paints? Ross.
He's like the Bob Ross of magic.
Yeah.
He's very sweet. And
also kind of a weird hairstyle, but like a chilled out, chilled out guy.
Yeah.
Nice. That's such a shame that he died so young.
Yeah.
And nobody's really doing what he did.
There's nobody like him.
Yeah,
he's
everyone's
so
coming on now suave and debonair.
Yeah, or like intense.
Or super intense.
Like, you're going to watch me do this. Watch me rip open my stomach. Wow.
Yes. Which brings us to the next person.
Yeah.
The guy that I want to talk about. Did I just lose this thing? One Christopher Nicholas Sarantakos, a.k.a. Chris Angel.
Chris Angel.
Now, I have met Chris Angel.
Also called Mind Freak.
Yes, he is the Mind Freak.
Yeah. Oh, he is the mind freak. Sorry.
Chris Angel is the mind freak.
Not
and
a
I think
mind
that's
freak.
Like trademarked. Like, I think we have to say it like that or we're gonna get a cease and desist. So Chris Angel is not my favorite kind of magician.
What?
He actually was made fun of in the Burt Wonderstone movie. Like,
yes.
This guy was mind fuck.
Yes.
He was like ready to have your mind fucked.
Yeah.
And but Chris Angel anyway, he's born in 1967. He is a proud Greek American from Long Island.
Long Island.
And he started doing magic when he was very young. Also, I think he was like maybe 12 or 13 years old, and he was doing parties and things like this. And of course, his parents wanted him to go to college, and he was like, I don't think so. I'm going into magic. So he created this show called Chris Angel Mind Freak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on A&E. It premiered in 2005. And he used to do things like walk on water, levitate. He walked up the side of the Luxor Hotel, like very big Vegas kind of magic, but also the kind of stuff that you when you watch it, you know that it's not real. And he's very open about that.
Yeah.
He's all about making it kind of an illusion. He's floated between two buildings. He made a Lamborghini disappear. He was in a crate of C4 that exploded.
Yeah.
This motherfucker cut himself in half.
Yeah.
He was run over by a steamroller while lying on a bed
of
glass.
It's like very violent things, acts of destruction.
But what's weird is that I went to see his show, and I met him at the gym.
Tell us about
that. Okay, so I'm a huge fan of working out and magic. So I just happened to be staying at the Luxor in Las Vegas. So my husband and I go to the gym.
Yeah.
And there's like nobody in there because who works out in the gym in Las Vegas? And we look over and I'm like, yo. Because we're on the trip. I'm like, that looks like Chris Angel. And my husband's like, no way. Why would he be working out in the regular Luxor gym? Because that's where he lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's
yeah.
nowhere else to like work out. So we went over and he was really shy and nice.
You didn't know what you were going to do.
And then we just said, hi. I said, I really like your show. I'm looking forward to seeing it this evening. And he actually seemed genuinely like, happy about it, but also a little like nervous because that kind of a personality, I don't know how well that works one-on-one.
Oh.
So then when I went to see a show later, at the beginning, some young girls, like 10, 11, 12 years old, were in the front row and they made him a quilt. Oh, sorry, they made him a quilt.
Oh, nice.
For Kristen, and they threw it on the stage and he was almost in tears. Like he thought it was so nice. He like pulled it up and he talked about the quilt. And it wasn't scripted at all. It actually threw the show off like 15 minutes.
Oh, no kidding.
The show is fantastic. His magic is really cool. And he seems like a very gentle and genuine person. Not mind freaky at all.
So it's turning out these magicians are very...
They have a persona.
Yeah.
And then
they're very gentle, shy
creatures.
They're
regular people because when he's not...
No, not even regular. No.
Shy.
Super...
Passive.
Nice.
Because when he's not in his Chris Angel mind freak stuff, it's just like, hey, a Greek guy. You know what I mean? Like it's just like a Greek guy with like an asymmetric haircut,
right?
From like a Jap from an anime. So in any case, so when his show first came on, apparently it was shit. Everyone got negative. Gave him
how
negative
come
reviews.
He
was supposed to be doing a show called Believe, and it was with Cirque du Soleil. And apparently there was not enough magic.
Yeah, because when you throw Cirque du Soleil in there, if you haven't seen Cirque du Soleil, it is a French aerobatics and French comedy.
Yeah,
and
it's all the things that generally Americans don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the high concept, weird storylines. Everything's in the dream sequence. It's a lot of contortion.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of
story. The acrobatics are very cool, and the things, and the trapeze, and people flying around.
But it's a 90-minute show, and I'm saying about, 12, 15 minutes of strong acrobatics.
Yeah, and then the French clowns come out, and everybody just...
People are freaked out. Children are crying. People are looking away. So he did this show, and it was so bad that apparently Perez Hilton, who's a blogger, was sitting in the front row during the show and texted that he'd rather be getting a root canal.
No.
So while Chris Angel was backstage, I guess he'd seen the text or the tweet. And then he came back out on stage and cursed him out.
Good.
And
good for him.
So it's bad in the sense of you shouldn't do that. At the same time, it's fuck you.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a comment about my show during the show, I'm going to make a comment about your comment during my fucking show. If you don't fucking like it. I like Chris Angel.
Get up and go.
Yeah, Long
get up
Island.
And get out.
Why don't you leave? You have nothing. You want to go get a root canal? We'll have one right now on stage.
I'll help you with
my next trick.
Guess what?
My next trick. So finally they
and it's not an illusion, by the way.
It's not an illusion. I'm just going to rip out your teeth.
Yeah.
With my hands.
Yeah.
So apparently they improved the show a lot, and to the point where I saw it, I thought it was amazing. So Chris Angel also got into a conflict with Uri Geller. He's the guy that bends the spoons. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, he's older.
He's much, much older. So he was on a show.
So Uri Geller, yeah, he's like, oh, look at this, I'm going to bend the spoon.
But I think he's only done it once,
The
spoon bending thing. And that's his whole thing is that I can bend spoons with my mind.
Yeah.
Chris Angel's thing is, no, you fucking can't. You can't. So they got into a shouting match, and so he challenged him and another one of these mentalists to guess what was written in an envelope in his pocket.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we're not going to do it. One of the guys called him an ideological bigot, like a magic bigot. And he was like, okay, fine, whatever. So he totally challenged these people who claim to be mentalists to show that this is just illusions, what magic is and what we do. So that's my comment on Mind Freak. The coolest thing about Chris Angel is that he gives away tons and tons of money through, he has a Make-A-Wish or a Dream Foundation for kids.
Yeah, I enjoyed his specials. They were
they're
on TV, and at the end of one, he was like, "All right, everyone, I'm going to have you levitate at home." and he was like, "Everyone, stand up." And I'm like, "Fine, nobody else is."
But he got everyone to stand up.
I stood up in my own apartment.
In your house by yourself.
Yeah, and he was like, and he walked you through it.
Did you levitate?
No,
no.
Because I was like, "What am I doing?"
So you got to believe.
You got to believe. Yes.
Like Chris Angel's Mind Freak.
Right.
So yeah,
he got me to stand up. So.
He did, and I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
because I can't do that.
Was the levitation part up off the couch.
You did levitate.
So I did
in Spanish. You levantate. So yeah, he's the Believe Foundation, and he just seems like a pretty cool guy in general.
He's cool. He's the current one. So the other current one, who you can kind of juxtapose the two, is one Mr. David Blaine.
Oh God. Uh-huh. Let me just tell you, I don't like him because he did that stunt in Lincoln Center where he was inside of a fish tank for 7 days and everyone was coming by to see him. And my friend told me that was the same weekend that his little brother was graduating from NYU.
Oh.
And it's like, you couldn't let him have that. Like, everyone's looking at you all the time, David.
Oh,
Blaine.
Yeah, right.
His
right.
little brother. Can you imagine?
Yeah. You know,
look
David
at me.
I'm David Blaine.
But do you have a degree from NYU?
Okay. He was born David Blaine White, April 4th, 1973. A young man.
Oh yeah, yes, a young man.
And he's best known for his high-profile feats of endurance and he's a street performer and he does close-up magic.
Okay,
so as opposed to Chris Angel's giant spectacle illusions. This is close-up magic.
I don't. Chris Angel does a little close-up, but that's not his thing. A close-up magician is a whole other animal.
You're right. And so the thing was, he did some really cool tricks, like real illusions. Sorry, David.
Yes. He's kind of a whore, though, so maybe tricks.
He had numerous specials, and he would do these illusions. And, I mean, they were really, very interesting, where he would have someone write a name on a card, and a playing card, and they would write the name on the card, and then he'd burn it, and he'd take that burnt stub of the card and rub it across his stomach. Over his shirt, and then he'd pick up his shirt, and there was the name written on his stomach.
On his six-pack, hopefully.
Yeah, his six-pack.
Look at me.
Okay, so there's really great illusions like that. However, if you ever watched him, watch how creepy he is, watching the reactions of who he's performing the tricks. Illusions for.
We could say tricks.
All right.
So he, what's his, like, characterized for you? Like, is it like he came? Or, you know what I mean? Like, what's
no. He looks, I hope not, because he looks
Did he ask for a towel afterwards? A another handkerchief out of the sleeve? I don't like David Lee. He's creepy.
He looks like a serial killer who just captured his prey and then is, like, has them down in the basement.
Oh, and putting the lotion in the basket.
Yeah, and he's, like, watching the and is taking out the tray of...
See, that's when you see people's issues.
You see, the razor blades and all this stuff, and he's like, see this? It's nice and sharp. And then watching the reaction, like, what do you think about that? And they're screaming and crying. Oh,
they're running the to and fro, yeah.
Through the gag.
And he's like, you look like my mother.
Yeah, just like a detached...
Maybe that's why I don't like
him. Detachment, and then, like, a weird curiosity. And that is the thing.
Is the creepy thing.
So watch that, listeners. Yeah. Look for that.
Ooh.
But I enjoyed his tricks. But then he started doing all the endurance feats where he's in a box for 7 days, he's really cold another time,
I don't know what that is.
He's sitting on top of a pole.
Isn't that a punishment? Of some kind?
Yeah, but I think the idea was that he wanted to go beyond the accepted limits of endurance, mm-hmm. and show people that anything was possible, that you could do these things. Plus, he trains himself, his body, to do different things so he can create other tricks. For instance,
I'm looking at Katie with, like, where is this going to go?
You've got to see this thing that he found out how to do. There was years ago, there was a trick where a magician would drink a ton of water, keep the water inside, then drink kerosene on top of that. Mm-hmm. Then water spout the kerosene out, light it on fire, and light something on fire across the room, and then water spout the water.
And put it out.
And put it out.
Wow.
So you need good stomach muscles.
Yeah. Right?
So he didn't know how to do it, and he found somebody out in the desert who knew how to do it because they would drink the water to survive, so they could bring it up anytime they wanted to.
I would think also maybe a yogi might know how to manipulate their stomach in that way, too. So he found someone to teach him how to do it.
So now he knows how to do it.
Is he doing it all over the
place? Well, he was doing it for Woody Allen in an apartment, but he was just doing the water spouting. He didn't do the kerosene, and he drank a lot of water, and he drank a fish. He drank some goldfish, and then he water spouted it out and the goldfish. And Woody Allen reacted with disgust. you did it, and they're alive. I don't know.
What a dick.
Yeah.
No, really.
Yeah.
Like, you invite someone who's, whether or not you like David Blaine, you got to admit, he's at the top of his game.
Yeah,
he's coming over to your house to show you a good time, and you're like, meh.
Yeah, basically. And then he did the whole fire version for Robert De Niro.
And he didn't like it either?
Who was, like, looking at him like, I don't know.
Like, please leave. Get this brother out of here.
Yeah, with faith.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, he's been buried alive. He's done, you know, the thing, whatever.
See, for the tricks where you're, like, buried alive, I like the idea that the guy's buried alive. 10 minutes after the cameras leave, he comes out of back door. He's gone down a pub. He's enjoying himself. Yeah. He's, like, going to the gym. Yeah. 5 minutes before the camera comes back, he sneaks back into the box. And ta-da.
Yeah.
You know.
But here's one thing. I'm like, David Blaine, how good are you? Because in 2011, his wife...
Yeah, they seem to make the wives disappear.
Yeah.
Chris Angel had a problem with that, David Copperfield.
Oh, wait a minute, the fiancé. She was going into labor, mm-hmm. and there was a blizzard, and they were in New York City. And so there were no cars, there were no taxis, so David Blaine had to get her to the hospital somehow. He couldn't magic her to the hospital, so he had to hail a snowplow to take her to the hospital.
Why couldn't he just deliver the baby? With magic.
That's what I say.
See, if he can do all that. If he had been Matthew McConaughey, he would have busted out some bongos and just sang it out.
Yeah.
He would have worked it out right there in their apartment.
He would have taken it out. He would have water spouted the baby out of his own body.
Yes.
For her.
It had to be in a real condition.
That's
it. You're listening to Hey You Know It with Jaquetta Sotmari and
Katie Kazmir.
We're telling you how it is and how it should be.
So I have here, I wanted to just give a brief background on David Copperfield.
Okay, because please.
David Copperfield is described as the most commercially successful magician in history. This guy is like a multi-millionaire. He's made over $4 billion dollars. Are you all right? Katie almost did the water spout trick.
I almost did.
With the Red Bull. He's made over $4 billion, 40 million ticket sales. He does 500 shows a year.
No.
This guy never stops working.
What?
Never stops working. He was born David Seth Kotkin on September 16th, 1956, and he's an illusionist. He calls himself an illusionist. He does big magic. Uh-huh. So he made, when I saw him, he made 16 people from the audience disappear.
Nice.
And I was in the front row and I was angry.
Because you were.
Because I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like it makes
were
you.
Were they on stage?
They were on stage and they disappeared and they ended up at the back of the. Of the theater, and these are real audience members. And when we tried to ask them, they don't know. I think he hypnotized them.
Wow.
He must have hypnotized all of them and sent them somehow to the back of the theater because they didn't have any idea what was going on. And I was in the front row. And I gave him, he comes around at the end and he gives everyone the high five.
You got a high five?
Very small hands. Oh. Like Bloomberg size.
Oh, no.
So when you see these images of David Copperfield, because they're all over Las Vegas, they have like life size. Like posters of him, they're bigger than life size.
Okay.
Because David Copperfield is like my size.
Tiny
little hands and feet.
Aw, that's sweet.
And ton of makeup.
Oh, yeah.
So he's so
like
wealthy. He's so wealthy that he bought 11 islands in the Bahamas.
Nice.
And it's David Copperfield's resort. Ooh. And so people go there, like celebrities go there and have like a wedding. It's $37,000 a day.
Get it.
Massages are extra. I was like, really?
Oh my God.
Tennis pro extra. Like, at what point do you know how to pay for massages? $37,000 a day.
For how many people?
12.
Ooh.
11 islands. So that's, you know, there's an extra island.
Okay.
For the other person. So he's from Metuchen, New Jersey.
Really?
Is that how you say it, Metuchen?
Why not?
He's the son of Jewish parents, an insurance adjuster, and a man who ran a haberdashery place in Metuchen. It's called Corby's.
Okay, go to Corby's.
Yes, go to Corby's. So he started doing magic at the age of 12. And then,
see, again.
Sorry, 10.
Oh.
At 10. And by 12, he was the youngest person ever to be in the Society of Magicians.
Maybe that's what stunted his growth.
Yes, maybe. He was a loner, it says, and he thought that magic would help him get ladies.
Oh.
And he had a lady for a while, but he was with Claudia Schiffer.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then they sued a paper in France because they said that that was an illusion. He won money. So in any case, it's by 16, he was teaching magic at NYU.
Okay.
What? He decided to
By 16, mm-hmm. he was teaching at NYU.
Yeah, by 16, he was teaching at NYU. He used to, as a teenager, he was obsessed with Broadway, and he used to sneak into shows to see things by Stephen Sondheim or to see Bob Fosse's work or whatever. So he enrolled in Fordham, and then 3 weeks into being a freshman at Fordham, he got the job of being the lead role in The Magic Man in Chicago.
Oh.
So he dropped out of school.
Oh, okay.
To do that, and it was the longest running musical in history. He was on that show for 3 years, and then when he left at, was it 3 years? A couple of years, sorry. 2 years, or 1 year. And then he left to headline at the Pagoda Hotel in Honolulu. So, by 1977, he was having his own shows, and eventually he goes to Vegas and becomes the David Copperfield that we know now.
Okay.
So, he is the big magician of our time. Like, nobody beats David Copperfield. Uh-huh. His illusions include making the Statue of Liberty disappear. Do you remember that one?
I remember that.
I remember staying up late to watch it. And the weird thing about the big illusions is that, like, for a close-up magician, you know, you have a little bit of patter at the beginning, a couple of minutes, and then you get to the trick. But for these big illusions, I think it was like a 2-hour special.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting there watching it as a kid going, when is it going to disappear? Yeah, when is it going to disappear?
He's got, like, a dancer coming out. Like magic.
Well, they had to cover the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that was like a big deal. He took his name, David Copperfield, when he started appearing in shows because he liked that character's name from Dickens.
Really?
Yeah. So he changed it from Kotkin to Copperfield.
I think everyone has to change their name if they're becoming a magician because you can't be, you need a persona. You need something different. You need to
And sometimes you're, you know, the amazing Kotkin.
Yeah.
Not as exciting as the amazing David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So his idols growing up were Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, Orson Welles, and Walt Disney. He has collected, he has a private museum somewhere in Vegas. I've heard that it's at the back of a sex shop. That's like the cover for it. You can only go in if you're like invited by David Copperfield.
Really? Okay.
But it's got like tons of memorabilia from like all the history of magic, lots of Houdini stuff, and just weird shit from different shows. Interesting thing about David Copperfield. In 2006, he and two female assistants were robbed at gunpoint after a show. Now, this is balls. He's just finished coming off a huge show.
Oh my God.
He's with his assistants. I guess they're coming out the back. They get stuck. They get held by gunpoint. They get nothing from him because of his sleight of hand. So they were able to rob the two women. But apparently, I imagine he just handed over his stuff and then just palmed it right back.
And they're like, give me your watch. And he's like, oh, you mean your watch? Yes. And he already
expected. Why would you rob David Copperfield? Oh, and by the way, they got caught. Because don't you think the Master of Illusion will be able to pick you out again and again and again? Like, that's what they do. They observe, right? Yeah. He's had tons and tons of lawsuits. The guy who sold him the islands complained because he didn't realize it was David Copperfield. And David Copperfield said, I didn't want you to know it was me because you try to fleece me, which is true.
Yeah, right, right.
He's sued people for...
Wouldn't you try to fleece anybody that's selling, like, buying an island
from but if you know it's David Copperfield and he's got $4 billion, you got to up your price.
Okay.
He also, a guy tried to publish some of his tricks. He sued that guy. Mm-hmm. Turns out the guy got the tricks wrong, so that there's, like, a counter suit, all this kind of weird stuff. And then he, in 2012, he made robocalls for the ballot initiative to get more casinos in Maryland, which is weird.
That's really weird.
Because he's, so people were getting it like, this is David Copperfield.
Hi.
Yeah, that was our David Copperfield, by the way.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
This is David Copperfield, and you should vote, you know, yes, on ballot, whatever, for casinos.
That's so funny.
Bizarre.
Well, maybe he wanted to, like have another Vegas, Maryland style, and then he could perform there. Magic for everyone.
Yeah, but you would go see David Copperfield, like, in the back of a subway car. You know what I mean? Like, people see him anywhere. So I found this interesting thing about him. During one of his shows, apparently, one of his assistants was sucked into the blades of a giant wind machine during the show. So they said people were watching the show, and, you know, they were preparing for the illusion, and then all of a sudden they heard a scream and then blood.
No.
The guy was made whole. Literally. Like, they got them all back together. Okay. Like, they stitched them back together and everything. And then David Copperfield, apparently, and his entire staff, like, went to the hospital and waited with the guy. And then they refunded everybody's money. But the point of the story is that it's really dangerous.
Yeah.
The stuff, these big illusions. He was like, people think that there's no danger element to this. But very, very, very dangerous.
Sure.
The stuff that I saw him do, he made 6 cars disappear. He made 13 people disappear. And then he took everybody's wallets. I mean, not wallets, the watches and rings. And no matter how many times I see that, I'm always amazed by it. I've never had it happen to me.
No.
But I've been sitting next to the person who's, like, shaking hands with a magician. And then halfway through the show, they're like, hey, C4F. And the guy's like, what the f-? It's such a bizarre thing. I'm into magic.
That's cool.
That's David Copperfield.
Nice.
So, what do you have?
I've got Harry Houdini.
Sweet. You've all heard of him.
Yes. He was born in 1874 and died in 1926.
So he was young.
Yeah, he was a Hungarian-American illusionist, and he did stunts and escape acts.
Okay.
So he was born in Hungary, but then he grew up in Wisconsin.
Wow, that's weird.
And apparently...
the Wisconsin part, not the Hungarian part. Nothing weird about Hungary.
Right. So he began his magic career. He worked at the circus. He was also the wild man at the circus.
Are you?
And he performed in dime museums. I don't know what a dime museum is.
That's one of the places where it's kind of like a peep show.
Oh, okay.
Museum stuff. Ooh. Yeah. Not in a bad way, but you know what I mean. Put your money in the slot, and then you see a little thing.
Right. He was a trapeze artist, and he was in sideshows.
He just wouldn't stop.
Yeah. No.
The wild man. That's just a funny job. Yeah. So he pretended to be like feral?
Yeah.
I'm crazy.
He started with it. He toured on the vaudeville circuit, and one of his big things, handcuffs. Handcuffs were his big deal.
Yeah.
Get in them, get out of them, do the whole thing. And he became the handcuff king. He also...
I wonder how his parents, but they were probably like, why?
And
why?
Then later on, like, you know, people are like, before his act, he would be stripped and nude and searched.
Okay.
And then allowed to get
dressed. Could you imagine that we strip David Copperfield down to a cavity search?
But as a kid, he would run around in Wisconsin and he would do these
things. Oh shit, it's in Wisconsin. I keep forgetting.
Yeah, you know, he would do these, he would, like, he got up and he would, like, pick the locks on every business. So when all the owners went to open their shops, it's all...
Right.
Yeah, so
they're really like, Houdini!
How dare you? And now in Wisconsin, they're trying to name their airport. They're trying to change the name of the airport to the Houdini Airport.
What is it now?
It's something boring, but it's...
it's probably someone who did something important.
No,
it's like someone who, like, brought, you know, discovered, you know, something important in Wisconsin. Like, the handcuff king.
His most famous act was the Chinese water torture cell.
Yeah.
He was suspended upside down in a locked glass and steel cabinet to overflow. It was overflowing with water. Mm-hmm. And he would hold his breath for more than 3 minutes and perform the escape. There was a book written with all his secrets in it, and then it was given to his brother, and then it was burned, or it was like some kind of... Anyway.
I feel like don't write those things. I feel like the magic goes with the magician. You know what I mean? Like, that's a part of the fun of some of these magic tricks, is that no one can replicate them.
Yeah, but one of the things... he carried lockpicks and keys, and he regurgitated them at will.
That I knew, and I always thought that was fascinating. Because I can't find my own damn keys half the time.
Well, try regurgitating. That's your thing.
I'll just put them in one of my stomachs. And I'll be fine.
Yeah.
One of the things that he did,
so he did all these kind of escapes, and he was once buried underground, like 6 feet under, in the dirt, no coffin. And he had to claw his way out. And
Oh my God.
He basically got his hand out, and then he passed out, and they had to pull him up. He's like, this is dangerous.
I feel like getting your hand out, trick is good. Like, I'm happy with that. I'm ready.
Then get
applause, yeah.
One of the things he really hated was...
buried underground? That sounds like a nightmare to me. You'd really have to train yourself not to freak out.
I know, right? He was in a few movies, but one thing he really hated...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He hated seances and people who claim to be psychic.
That's so weird, because every year they try to bring him back with a seance.
Yeah, well, spiritualists. He thought that they were just full of it. And he would go around and pretend that he would go as somebody else and go to this...
Frank Houdini.
And then he would sit there during the spiritualists, you know, the psychics and mediums, and doing the thing, and then call him out on it. Be like, this is how you do it.
Oh, well, I'm sure people loved him.
By the way, I'm Houdini.
Yeah. Would he throw down, he would regurgitate some keys real fast. Throw down some handcuffs.
Yeah, and he offered a cash prize to, he was a member of a Scientific American community that offered a cash prize to any medium who could successfully demonstrate supernatural abilities.
He must, if only he knew now that people were trying to conjure him up all the time, he'd be so angry.
Well, he did a thing. Well, he made a pact with his wife when he said when he died, like, they had a secret code, and that if he could come back, he would say whatever the code was. So
and then she would
was,
know. Yeah. It wasn't BS.
So for years, they were trying to
conjure him. Maybe that's why people still do it now.
Yeah.
Although no one knows what the code is now.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that his wife... took it to her grave.
Right. Okay. So, the secret code was Rosabelle believe. So now it's blown. So now he can't even come back.
Yes, everyone knows now.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but she would do it and he never apparently came back. And, she had left a candle burning, perpetually.
Not in a metaphorical way, like an actual candle.
Beside a photograph of him. And then after 10 years, she blew it out and said, 10 years is long enough to wait for any man.
Wow. Let that be a lesson to you, ladies.
Yeah, so he's buried, but people still will try to...
To conjure him.
Absolutely.
How did he die?
You know, that's kind of controversial, because they think that some
what
of
do
these,
you think?
Some of the spiritualists...
they got to
they
him?
They got to him.
I wouldn't be surprised, because he was fucking up their shit.
Basically, he died. He went to perform a show, and he was in great pain, and he had appendicitis.
Oh, no.
And he was getting sicker and sicker on stage, and he wouldn't go to the hospital. And then by the time he went,
it was too late.
It was too late.
Oh.
And that's how it was. That's how he died. But they really do believe that, some people do believe that he was murdered by...
I wouldn't be surprised.
And they wanted to exhume his body.
Yeah.
And check it out, and then...
They wouldn't allow him to do
still,
so. Wow.
Yeah, the great-grandnephew wanted to do it as recent as 2007. And they were like, no.
I would love to find out. I imagine in those circles back then, there was a lot of animosity.
Oh,
you
know?
Because the magicians are actually doing something. Like, they're actually... The ones who are not pretend that are doing illusions are saying this is an illusion. Or in the case of David Blaine or Harry Houdini, these are feats of strength.
Yeah.
Or endurance.
Yes.
Or whatever it is. They're not, you know, plucking your aunt Beasley out of the sky.
Right.
And having a conversation
with
her.
And I can imagine, like, as a magician, you have a magician's code where you can't tell any of these secrets.
Well, you're supposed to. But remember, there was a show years ago where some guy was going around explaining everything on TV.
Oh, right. He had a mask on.
They found out who he was, and he got expelled.
Yeah, well.
From the magician's code. Why would you show things like that?
And he had a gut, and he's, like, running around. He was, like...
What you're saying is a has-been?
Yeah, I think that he was, like, they had other...
Let me see if I can find where that guy was. Oh, here it is. In 1997, the masked man, Val Valentino, a.k.a. Richie Hornstein, provides much controversy by exposing magic secrets on a major Fox TV special. I remember that. Mm-hmm. I refuse to watch that because I don't want to know how these tricks work. Right. I want to be amazed.
I watched some of it. I was like, what? So, it still looked hard. It's still hard to do,
but it's like, if I know how it works, then why would I go see it? I don't know. So I found this is interesting. Six magicians who bit it while doing the bullet catch.
Oh, no.
So the magic bullet. So is it, first of all, it is possible for someone to catch a bullet in their mouth.
It is?
It is possible. But you have to have a lot going on in your mouth.
Oh, I would imagine.
You have to have a lot going on. So this guy wrote a book. It's called 12 Have Died, Bullet Catching, The Story and Secrets. Worst title ever. I think they could come up with something a little, like I said, magicians who bit it.
Bite the bullet.
Yeah, bite the bullet, right? So Madame Delinsky, 1820, the wife assistant of a Polish magician, had a routine where she faced a firing squad of six soldiers. But back in the day, rifles were loaded when you had to bite the cartridge and then pour the contents inside and then jam the rest down with the barrel and into the barrel with a ramrod.
Yeah, it's a whole process.
Yeah, so the soldiers who were doing it, they were shills. She paid them to, you know, pretend to load it up, and they didn't really load it up. Apparently, one guy got nervous, loaded, shot her in the stomach.
Oh!
Yeah, she died 2 days later, and then apparently she was pregnant.
And her last word was, you asshole.
You asshole. And then her husband was driven mad by the shock of the accident because she was, you know, she was carrying a child.
Oh, God.
There's a guy called Uncle Buck. He would ask people to come from the audience and volunteer to load up the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently someone didn't like him very much, loaded the gun for real with a real bullet, and then shot him.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
So then here's a guy.
But the people that he would ask on stage, they were plants, right?
No. He wasn't using a plant, which is stupid.
Yeah.
Right? So here's another guy called Chung Ling Su. Hold on. His real name, though, is William Ellsworth Campbell Robinson.
Okay.
He didn't like the name. He performed under the names Ahmed Ben Ali and Nana Sahib.
Oh, those are catchy.
Catchy, right. Yes. And I'm sure he looked the part.
Yeah.
I'm sure he looked the part. So then he changed his name to Chung Ling Su after Ching Ling Fu, who was a famous magician. So then basically two assistants were to fire guns at him and he was going to catch each bullet in his teeth. So each gun had two barrels, one with a real bullet, the other one with a blank.
Mm-hmm.
And then by accident one night, there was too much buildup of gunpowder in one of the bullets and then they shot him. Yeah. But, they're saying at first it was foul play, but then it looks like it wasn't foul play. But I don't know how you can tell.
Yeah, right.
Like at some point, I guess your assistant's like, you know what? F you.
Yeah, really?
F you.
No,
why?
You told me that I would have my time. I have my illusion I want to do.
Yeah, and then the assistant all of a sudden the next day is like, hey, I'm ready.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, by the way, we can't do it.
Then there's a guy called the Black Wizard of the West. His name was H.T. Sartell, and the story goes that he bought some wax bullets and attempted to do the trick on stage, but he didn't practice at all. He thought he was going to run up there and just do it.
Oh, are you kidding?
He asked his wife to do it, and unbeknownst to him, his wife had a little bit of beef.
Oh.
So instead of the wax bullets, she put real bullets in, and she simply shot him. She gunned him down.
And
during
the trick. Afterwards, she dropped the gun and was like, boom, that's it. That's the last time you cheat on me. I don't know what their problem was.
Then there was the last guy. This guy is called Ralph Biala. He died in 1975. He'd done the trick over 3,000 times. He actually did catch the bullet in his teeth, but he had a set of like metal teeth.
Oh, well, sure.
Behind his teeth.
You need to do that.
And unfortunately, so what he would do is he had gloves that were steel.
I even have metal teeth behind my teeth, and I don't even catch bullets.
He had gloves made of steel, and he would put them around his mouth like he was going to shout, and he would make a funnel. And that's the place where the bullet was supposedly going to go. But apparently, after being shot over 3,000 times, he had poor circulation and other problems. And then after recovering from an injury related to the trick, he fell off a cliff. So that's the other way that you can die. He was strolling in the mountains. Apparently, it was very scenic. And then he just fell over.
Oh my God.
Of these deaths to me sound really suspicious.
Just you fell know? Off the side of a cliff.
Yeah, he just fell off the side of a cliff.
As
like,
one
in, like in Maine.
Right. Right.
Like in Maine. So
that's right. Was it Beauregard? What's a show about magic without Siegfried and Roy?
I don't know. It's not this show. By the way, just full disclosure, I've never seen them. Whenever I go to Vegas, the Tigers are there. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, you're never going to see them again. They're
you mean the first time?
Yeah.
I'm ignorant.
Basically,
on this,
all right.
School me. Take me to magic school.
This was in 2003.
Okay.
I actually was in Vegas, and I wanted to go see them. And my friend said, I don't feel like seeing magic. Let's go see Second City instead.
Okay.
And we saw David Sudeikis. No, it's just Jason Sudeikis. Sorry.
One of them.
And so that's what I saw instead. And then 2 weeks later, this happened.
Oh, that
the
was
incident,
your chance.
That was my chance.
Damn, your friend.
I know.
Sorry, friend.
I know.
Second City's still there, though. Siegfried and Roy, not so much.
Yeah, it was October in 2003.
I feel like there should be some mood music.
Basically, during a show at the Mirage.
Mm-hmm. Which is beautiful, by the way, the Mirage.
Roy was bitten on the neck by a 7-year-old male white tiger named Montecore.
Why is it gotta be white? Okay.
Oh, they only had white tigers.
Really?
They're German.
So... The tigers?
There's Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, Siegfried and Roy.
No. White
are
tigers.
They, are they dyed white or are these like
white
natural
tigers,
blondes?
Okay. Natural.
Yeah, sure. Well,
natural.
Just like all my friends.
Yeah. Natural. Yeah, and as Horn was being, he was critically injured. He
This was on during the show.
During the show, the cat just attacked him.
And
took him by the neck and started dragging him off stage.
I'm always worried, like, who's the first person in the audience to yell, oh my God!
Yeah.
You know?
They say that the rumor was at the time that the cat got worked up because a woman had in the audience in the front had big hair. It's like she had like high hair and it was.
They should address that. They should not let black people come to the show because we have massive hair sometimes. No weaves in the front.
So as, like, you know, he had to be taken to the hospital, of course, but as he's being taken away, he said, Montecore is a great cat. Make sure no harm comes to Montecore.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's okay, but he's it's very limited the things he can do, but he can do a lot of things, and he's very upbeat about it. He goes for physical therapy.
I'd be wearing fucking tigers. I'd be in Africa hunting tigers. I would have lost my mind.
Yeah, well, they closed the show. That's it. There's no more.
There's still no tigers more, there, but there's no magicians.
No Siegfried and Roy. That's it. That,
wow.
They're done. But then they actually did like one other show afterwards in like 2010, and that was it.
I have to say, I've seen, I think it was either Lance Burton or there's another guy named Dirk Anthony, I think. And I sat in the front row,
mm-hmm.
as I usually do, because I love magic and I got to be in the front. Otherwise, you know, why am I there?
Yeah.
And they had I think it was a puma.
Mm-hmm.
No, a panther.
Oh.
And it was in like a glass cage,
mm-hmm.
like all glass, no bars, right? You couldn't see how it was put together. And they lowered this thing down, and the cage was big enough so that it could pace around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm looking at this thing, and I swear to you, that cat was like, bitch, if I could get up out of here,
yeah.
it's going to be you and me. That cannot be fun. Two shows a night,
no.
Dark Mondays?
No.
For a cat?
No.
These things are, I've only seen animals in a zoo. I've never seen an animal in a theater setting like that. You realize when they're inside how big
they
and powerful they
right.
are.
Right.
And that they have no business in your magic act. I'm sorry. Maybe a duck, maybe some goldfish, mice,
yeah,
rabbits, fine. A cat?
No.
They're going to snap.
No.
I saw the documentary Blackfish, which I'm Rod, the Black Guy Who Tips,
recommended. Oh, yes. The Black Guy Who Tips is a great podcast. Yeah. Karen and Rod.
He recommended it. It's about killer whales at SeaWorld.
I've seen it. And I've had to stop it several times.
I watched it twice.
I had to stop it several times to like compose myself because it was so...
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You don't feel bad when these animals attack.
No,
because these people, they don't want to be where they are, in any case. So
no.
You did not see Siegfried and Roy, and you never shall.
No, but if you guys want to really read some interesting writing, go to the Siegfried and Roy website. Just
and what's on there? Who's written it?
They each have a bio, and it's basically about how they became interested in magic and how they met each other.
What is their background in magic? Did they always work with cats?
No, they didn't. But they basically both had crappy upbringings, basically found each other on a boat. They were young, and one was doing the magic act. The other one wasn't. The other one had the cat.
Whole Germany.
And then whichever one was doing the magic act asked the other guy to be the assistant. Mm-hmm. And so he helped him and was like, hey, guess what? I've got this cat. Can you work that into the act? And they were like, what?
Really?
And they did, yeah.
I just basically happen to have a lion. I don't know if you could use that in your act. Just out on a limb.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But I just loved, like, you have... Oh, my God. Okay, so basically, Siegfried, I got to tell you this. It's like, how did you become interested in magic? And he's like, one afternoon in Rosenheim, Germany, when I was 8 years old, he passed a bookstore. He says, my eye caught something in the window. It was a book on magic. I knew I had to have it. I can't explain even now why that was. All that stood in the way were 5 marks. For me, a fortune. A fortune for any little boy in Germany in 1947.
Really?
That's how it is.
1947?
Yeah. So he went home and he was doing chores and he was hoping that his mother would give him money. And she was
1947?
Like, yeah.
When was the war?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the mother's like, what's the matter with you? And he said, well, there's this book on magic. And she threw up her hands and told him he must be out of his mind. 5 marks for a magic book was impossible.
And she probably said something about Jews as well.
If not for the Jews, you would have had it, but guess what?
Yes. Forget
it. They got all the 5 marks.
Yeah. Well, that's so crazy.
And he said, determined, he left the house and began walking. What happened next only happens in fairy tales.
Or in this blog.
Yeah. What happened to Siegfried, there on the pavement was a 5-mark note. And
really?
He picked it up, went to the shop and bought the book, studied it.
See, I think this falls under the Orson Welles school of, I'm not going to tell you the truth, and if you demand me to tell the truth,
guess
I'm leaving
what?
This interview.
Right. So it goes on, and so that's basically their stories are...
And, but now they're not doing anything.
Yeah, but they're loaded.
And are they partners?
Yes.
Okay.
But they don't really talk about that either, but they're partners.
Really? Because
yeah.
They're like the most partnery partners I've ever seen. Usually when you see a 2-person magic act, one person is like, if I could just get out from under this motherfucker's...
Yeah.
You know?
The other one's, yeah.
And the other one's like, oh, I don't need this guy. I want to be on my own. But they seem like they're real, like, in it to win it real partners. Or they were. Everything.
Yeah.
Put that in the past tense, because now they're done.
Somebody asked Roy, like, when did your life begin? He's like, when I left home.
When I met Siegfried.
Yeah, basically. And their first animal, their first cat was called Chico.
I don't know. I don't like the... After seeing Blackfish,
yeah.
I just don't... I can't enjoy animals in a magic show.
Oh, and again, you know, they say things. In magic, anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those became the most important words of my life. You know, so there you go, man.
Wow, what world are they living in? Abracadabra, form of
a bedroom. Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
And we'll send you an official Hey You Know It shot glass as a token of our appreciation. As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows. And yes, you will receive an official Hey You Know It shot glass as well.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at HeyYouKnowIt.com. Thanks. No psychic, but I can see what you mean, girl. And you don't have to write it, 'cause looking at your body, I can read, girl. You're giving me the eye, and it's making me... The pretty boy, supposedly.
From Saturday Night Live, he was actually...
Oh, he was
second.
On Saturday Night Live? Okay.
Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah,
no, right?
I know him from starring with Jason Bateman in
yes.
the films. I didn't know he, because I don't watch Saturday
Yeah,
Night
he
Live.
Was in Saturday, he actually was in Second City, and then that was his last show that he did with Second City in Vegas.
Before he went to SNL.
Right.
Even though now there's a shitload of black women on SNL, I'm still not going to fucking watch it.
Yeah.
Apparently it's like full of black women. They're all over the place.
They're chock-a-block.
Yeah. They're hanging from rafters. All right, what do you got?